are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. I am Jackson Gatlin, host of Locked On Rockets. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. He is Matt Moore, senior NBA writer at the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. And you can follow him for all his tirades and musings over at HP Basketball. Matt, are you excited to talk about last night's action?
Such a big slate. So much stuff happened. I'm dizzy from it. Should be a great show.
It is going to be a great show, but first, this episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. Now, Matt, we've got so many different games to sift through from last night or from this slate. I feel like the game of the night to me was 76ers Bulls for a lot of different reasons. Are you okay if we dive into that one first?
Let's go right there.
So one, this was a game where the Bulls actually only led for like a fragment, like at the very top of the game. 76ers led the whole way. And even though they did lead the whole way, there was, and the Bulls were down by as many as 15 at different points in this game. It never felt like the 76ers had like a comfortable lead. Like, just you look up and every single time the Bulls are just chipping away at the lead. They just keep coming at you. And I kept thinking about the Bulls like ridiculous comeback against the Celtics, and I was just kind of waiting for like DeRozan or LaVine to hit the like the turbo button and get scorching hot and like launch themselves back into this game. And that never quite happened in this one, but they were very much in this game all the way up until the final buzzer, making things really, really interesting down to the wire.
This game's kind of bizarre. So going into tonight, I consider this to be what I call a proof of concept game. And the concept is the Bulls' defense legit? Because the Bulls have been winning their games with defense, which if I told you that the Bulls would be have a great record to start the season because of their defense, you would have slapped me and called me a liar.
Probably.
Please don't do that. So this is a proof of concept game. All right, big game on the road, Philly. And then Tobias Harris is out and Danny Green is out. And like everything is setting up for the Bulls to kind of, you know, maybe they'll come out of this looking very much the same. Here's what's really interesting. Okay, the Sixers shoot a respectable 49% from the field. Not great, not very good, but 49% from the field for this season. That's not bad for a lot of teams. The Pistons would dream of 49% from the field. They shot 43% from three. They hit 12 of 28 from three-point range. Not a lot of attempts. They only get 18 from Embiid on 18 shots. He goes 6 of 18. They wind up with just an offensive rating of 106. But, like, that's enough for them to eke out this win. The Bulls do wind up coming back. DeMar DeRozan was terrific. 37 points. Phenomenal in that fourth quarter. But what I kind of walk away with in this game is Chicago is going to have to fix its offense, which has not been good enough to start this season. Like, they've been getting by on defense. It is not going to get them by forever because their defense, I think, will slowly erode. Nikola Vucevic has had a rough go of it this season. He started out and he was sick, not COVID, just sick. And that, like, messed with him a little bit. He missed one game and was going to miss another and then played. 2 of 7 tonight, 7 shots, 4 points. Like, 4 points from Vucevic. I get it's Embiid. I get it. It's tough. It's a tough matchup. I understand. But they really have got to figure out ways to get their offense going. And I don't necessarily know how that's going to happen because they've loaded this roster with so many defensive guys. Alex Caruso, Derrick Jones Jr., Tony Bradley, Javonte Green, to be perfectly honest, even Lonzo Ball to a degree. Like, this offense really is supposed to be LaVine, Vucevic, and DeRozan. LaVine didn't have a great night, 11 and 24, but still put up 27 and 9. But Vucevic doesn't show up, and that's not enough to get them over the hump. Like, that's kind of where I get to with this Bulls team is, I think they're going to be good. I thought they were going to be good in preseason. They've gotten off to a great start, feeling great about my overbet. However, I do think that they're going to have to get their offense together because against the Sixers, who were shorthanded, they just did not have enough. And the Sixers, look, credit to their entire team-centric formula. They just found a way to grind them down, even though they were missing two key guys.
Yeah, the Bulls should have had enough in this with the Sixers missing a couple of their key guys. And the fact that, Joel Embiid did not have a great game. I felt like he settled a lot in this game, right? Misses the last game due to rest. But then in this one, like, he settled for so many just, like, kind of mid-range jumpers, like, kind of starts backing out or, you know, facing up the defender, gets the defender on his heels a little bit, and then he just pulls up, like, randomly from the mid-range. I didn't think he really, like, took advantage of the Bulls' defense as much as he could have. Right? He's Joel Embiid. He can kind of get whatever he wants at the rim whenever he wants. He settled a lot in this one. Really, Matt, I come away thinking this Bulls team is going to have to figure out a way to get more three-point attempts. They're dead last in the NBA in three-point attempts right now. And this game specifically, it literally just came down to the math. Like, you look, the 76ers were 12 of 28. They hit 12 threes. The Bulls were 6 of 21 from three. They both hit 38 shots from the floor. It literally came down to the math of the three-pointers and then one free throw, and that was the difference in this game. And I think maybe that's an area, right? It's Vucevic. He's dealing with, you know, going up against Joel Embiid. Maybe just, you know, get some sets where he can, you know, attempt a few more three-pointers. He only had two attempts in this game. He only had seven shot attempts overall. Maybe that's a way that they can get him a little bit more involved offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you really want... I mean, Vuce can shoot a little bit. Like, I like him in certain spots to spread the floor. I think a lot of it... This is part of the complication. I also think this is part of the complication with DeRozan, as good as he's been. He has been really good for them. I think when the spaces that he operates in that mid-range, it's hard to hit the opposite corner, right? Like, you're not overloading a side. Like, he's operating in kind of that mid-range area. And so the defense is never really overloading. And since they're not overloading, you can't then reverse it to the weak side and hit the corner. Because, like, I would say that the Bulls don't need to generate more three-pointers. They need to generate high-quality three-pointers because I don't know that they have the shooters to accomplish otherwise. Like, they need to really focus in, I think, on how to generate corner threes. The only other, like, way to do that is, like, you have to rebalance, I think, LaVine to even more three-point attempts, which I don't know if that's something that he's comfortable with. He's worked on it, right? He did a lot last year. I think it's important for him. He was 2-7 tonight, right, in a close game where LaVine has a good shooting night, and maybe this game is different. Like, maybe that really is the difference. It's just LaVine hitting a few more threes. Like, the Bulls were here. Yes, it was the Bulls versus the Sixers without Tobias Harris and Danny Green and, oh, by the way, Ben Simmons, but they were there. I just don't know, without Patrick Williams, I think it's part of the equation too, I don't know where they're going to generate those threes from. Like, I don't want DeRozan shooting threes. Like, it's too late. That ship sailed. The train's left the station. DeMar's not shooting threes. Shouldn't shoot threes. He's good at what he does. But they need to figure out ways to rebalance things where they're generating more threes out of good sets. Like, you have all this pressure with your offense in terms of the star power. Use combinations that are going to create those types of opportunities. It's going to be a challenge unless they make a trade, though. They just don't simply have the shooters, I don't think.
And I just don't, obviously it's not exactly sustainable to rely on DeRozan going for 30 plus and LaVine almost 30 on every, you know, on a nightly basis. They need some contributions, a little bit more scoring punch from the other guys on the roster, because, right, you can't just rely on those two guys to go off every single night. I will say that I was largely impressed with the units that they trotted out when they have Alex Caruso out there and running alongside DeRozan, Lonzo, LaVine, and Vooch. That lineup was like a terror in the game. And Caruso did a great job off the bench. Didn't score like exceptionally well off the bench, just 6 points, but he had six assists. And when they get out running, they had 28 fast break points in this game. When they're out running in transition, they looked really, really good. And I don't want to spend the entire time talking about the Bulls because I do want to give some credit to the 76ers in this game. Matisse Thybulle is everywhere defensively.
Yeah.
Like, he should easily be making an all NBA defensive team selection this year, at least.
He's DPOY quality, right? Like, there's a lot of guys on that list, especially this year since nobody can shoot. But I do think that the Thybulle is going to be, I'm not going to be surprised if he winds up generating a significant number of votes for defensive player of the year.
Right. I mean, it just, again, he had so many different areas where he was just blowing up different sets, different plays for the Bulls, making things difficult. And, you know, in one possession, he'd be guarding one guy on one side of the court and get switched and then, you know, be guarding somebody else or come over from the weak side. I was just really impressed with his defense all throughout this game. But Coming up, we want to go around the league, hit on some of the other games, and we'll get there after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Because look, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's basically impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts that you need for your car or truck. And why would you want to go in person and you got to, you know, ask the guy behind the counter all these questions? He's going to ask you a million questions. He's going to go on his computer, try to order the parts because they're not going to be there in person, right? Just visit rockauto.com. You're going to save a lot of money. Why would you want to spend up to 30, 50, or even 100% more for the exact same auto parts? Just visit rockauto.com. Their catalog is remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly find the brands and specifications that you need for your car or truck. And when you go to checkout, be sure to, like, when you click the little shopping cart icon and you go to checkout, be sure to write "locked on" in their "how did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts your car will ever need. Be sure to visit rockauto.com.
I had an absolutely miserable night betting, Jackson. I had an absolutely miserable night. I have a model that tells me, that gives me some leans, and it actually did okay. It went 6-5. Guess which five bets I took? So not a great night for me on the slate, but I'm back at it. And that means I'm going to be at Bet Online, which is back and better than ever. They've got a new web interface for the start of basketball season. More props, more odds, more lines than ever before. They remain your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. You can head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Basketball, football, baseball, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right up to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA.
And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Thursday, let's go around the league and check in on some of the other games from last night's action. So we had Blazers, Cavs, Cavaliers holding off the Blazers at home by a final score of 107-104. Jarrett Allen had a huge night for the Cavaliers, 24 points, 17 rebounds, and 4 assists, as well as a beautiful game-saving block, well, almost a block, a game-saving contest on Damian Lillard's three-point attempt trying to tie things up at the end of regulation. Look, it was a really rough outing for Dame. He smoked a wide-open layup that would have tied things up at 103. Then he missed a three, got blocked all within the final couple of minutes trying to close the gap in this one. He did get an and-one bucket to bring the Blazers within three, but it just wasn't enough. Yeah, no Dame time.
It was also not a special time. It was not no bing bong tonight either for doing the memes. No bing bong as the Knicks fall 98-111 to the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers have been maddeningly inconsistent this season, just wildly inconsistent. I do not know what to expect of them from night to night. However, they finally were able to get 4 out of their 5 expected starters back tonight. Caris LeVert's back. Malcolm Brogdon's back. Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner, Chris Duarte got in on the action. He continues to be a very impressive rookie. Hit a huge buzzer beater in the second quarter. But the story, man, Miles Turner just destroyed the Knicks. 25 points, 13 boards, 2 assists, 3 blocks, 9-14 from the field, 7-10 shooting. This Pacers offense, when it's humming, is absolutely incredible. If they could just not play third quarters, like ever, like just never play third quarters, and the Indiana Pacers might be one of the best teams in basketball. Sadly, they continue to struggle in their third quarters. This was actually like more of a blowout. And then the Knicks once again won a third quarter because the Pacers are the worst team in the league in that third quarter. Is absolutely historic how bad they are in that quarter. But they held on for the win. That's a good like bounce back spot for them. Really pretty miserable night shooting for the Knicks. The Knicks have been really great at getting up threes. They were averaging 48 per game. They only took 24 in this one. They got away from their game plan for whatever reason. They really did not kind of press the issue from the perimeter. If you're going to play Indiana, you got to bring offense, and the Knicks simply didn't have enough tonight. So no bing bong, but the Pacers get the win.
Keeping things out east, the Celtics picked up a win over the Orlando Magic in Orlando, 92-79, a final score straight out of, like, what, the early 2000s, the 90s? Jason Tatum struggled, just 4 of 16 shooting for 14 points, but Jaylen Brown did not. Brown finished with 28 on 10 of 17 shooting. Boston had a 31-10 third quarter to cruise to the finish line. I don't know if you can exactly call it cruising, though, seeing as how they finished just 92-79. So maybe it was more just a beleaguered limp to the finish line, but they got the win. Boston continuing. This is an Orlando Magic team that's going to be a bottom five team this season. And so I don't know if, look, at this point, if you're the Boston Celtics, you just got to be racking up wins any way you can get them. So even though it's not exactly impressive that they're beating the Orlando Magic, you just got to pat yourself on the back and say, hey, we got the win.
Ease off the panic button. That's the key for Boston. They got that done. I guess the Raptors are back. I don't understand this team. They win 109.
My Raptors, Matt. My Raptors. The Raptors that I believe in.
109-100 over the Wizards. Look, Fred VanVleet was fantastic in this game. Just killed them in the mid-range. The Wizards play drop, which they're going to do. VanVleet goes for 33 points, 6 assists. And Ananobi had 21, but it was on 9 of 20. Wasn't necessarily all that fantastic. Like Gary Trent Jr., 2 of 8 from three. It was mostly just like Fred VanVleet scored a lot and they got enough. And then the Wizards continue to just not be able to shoot, whether it's the new basketball or fatigue or whatever. Bradley Beal goes 8 of 18, 25 points, but like that's not enough in this kind of a contest. Their defense fell apart. The Wizards looked tired and kind of beat up. Kyle Kuzma in particular got hurt early and kind of muscled through it, but it was pretty rough. He only played 21 minutes, 1 of 10 from the field for Kuz. Wonder if he's going to miss some time. KCP went 0 of 6 from 3. Kuzma 0 of 5. They just couldn't shoot. So, like, I want to credit Toronto, but it really just felt like the Wizards just can't shoot. But at the same time, I can't deny, like, Toronto has now won 5 in a row. They're now the 4th seed in the East at this point at 6-3. I do not understand it. I will tell you, I am letting go of my priors on the Raptors. I have decided to just move away from them. My priors were, I don't think this team is very good. I think this team might wind up tanking. And now I'm like, I guess they'll be in the playoff conversation.
It's okay. We're going to revisit this in Stockwatch. We're doing it in Stockwatch.
Just because they got some guys, the Raptors win over the Wizards.
Oh, man. All right. Let's go into one of our other games for the night. We've got the Atlanta Hawks, Brooklyn Nets. Final score, Nets winning 117-108. And this was a game where Kevin Durant continues to just do Kevin Durant things.
Yeah.
And even with the absence of Kyrie Irving, even with James Harden off to a relatively slow start by his standards, I suppose,
relatively
this season. I'm going to say relatively, if only because, look, I've watched the guy for the better part of the last decade. He's had some slow starts, right, during his Houston tenure. But this is different than that, right? This is like, he doesn't look like the same James Harden at times. He looks like he's being overly passive. I don't want to say overly passive. He's being overly unselfish. Let's go with that, right? Like, he's working so hard to get everybody else involved at times. But there were, like, times in this game where I saw him pass out of, like, wide open layups at the rim that he would normally finish. And I'm not going to sit here and attribute all of this to the rule change, like mentally, like is it bugging him or anything like that? I just think he isn't quite 100% yet physically, and it's a variety of factors at play. And it doesn't hurt things that he's also still one of the best passers in the league and can get other guys involved to where you can get a guy like Joe Harris going 6 of 8 from downtown for 18 points in this game. You can get guys going. You can, you know, get the rest of the offense humming if guys are hitting their shots, but they lucked. I don't want to say that they lucked out in this game, but there's going to come a time when James Harden needs to be James Harden, like score 30 plus. And we haven't seen that version of him yet to start this season.
You know, the Hawks kind of hung in this game. They hung around and they hung around and they hung around, but they gave up a 34 point third quarter. And that was pretty much all she wrote. Like, they just couldn't get the stops that they needed to. And you don't expect that, but you mentioned Harden struggles. Trae Young, 6 of 22.
Started the game insanely hot and then just cratered.
And then cratered. 10 assists for Young, just like there's 11 assists for Harden. Harden, I watched a lot of his tape today for a piece I wrote over at Action. He does not look the same at all. Like, you've watched that guy every single night for years and years. I've done 3 MVP features, which meant that I had to watch every single possession of his career for 3 years. And you just pick up on a lot of things. A good example is like his floater. He's not exactly a jump out the gym type of dude, but like he jumps, he's an NBA athlete. He leaps, he's like hopping. Like it's like barely a skip on these floaters, which means that on half of them, he's coming up short. 5 of 14, 1 free throw. 1 again for Harden, very conspicuous. I tweeted about one of them. He's not getting the moves where he gets to the middle and then puts his elbow up into the chest and the guy's there. And so he's initiating contact, but the defender is impeding his progress. So that was a foul. They're not calling that. And that, I think, is a pretty big problem. On the Hawks side, I can't fathom why Clint Capella only had 13 points and 8 shots in this game. I really can't. Only 2 fouls, too. It wasn't foul trouble. Like, you have to get Capella involved in this matchup. The Nets do not have anyone to guard the rim. They have no rim protection. None. But this is also a team that switches a lot in Brooklyn, and that really bogged them down. DeAndre Hunter had a great night, 10 of 11 for 26 points. He was phenomenal, plus 4, really contributed a lot. The benches were not good. Cam Reddish 1 of 6. Herter gave him some offense, but they couldn't get any stops. Like, the Nets bringing out Patty Mills, who was a game-high plus 17. I'm sorry, Bembry was plus 18, but he was plus 17, 5 of 9, 4 of 7 from 3 for Mills, who continues to be red hot. They're getting good minutes from LaMarcus Aldridge, like, who hit a 3, by the way. 2 threes for LaMarcus Aldridge tonight. A combination of factors. I still feel like Atlanta is going to find their tempo. They're going to find their groove. But they're not quite in equilibrium either. This was mostly just like a Nets. This was like what I expect a lot from the Nets, which is like, well, they weren't great, but Joe Harris made a lot of shots and they have Kevin Durant. So
they hit 22 threes and shot 45.8% from behind the arc. So it's just kind of, yeah, and they still only won by 9. I find it interesting how well it seemed like the bench unit played for the Nets. And I wonder if that's going to be like a sustainable thing moving forward, or because especially, right, we've seen Steve Nash at the beginning part of the season kind of tinkering with, okay, is he going to stagger Kevin Durant and James Harden? Is he going to kind of play them together for certain minutes? And they mentioned it during the broadcast, but the numbers are actually like pretty stark in comparison to when either KD's on the floor by himself or Harden's on the floor by himself, the offense hums a lot better. And then when they're both on the floor together, things get a little funky. And I don't exactly know why that is. It doesn't quite make sense. If you've got two of the greatest offensive players in the NBA, why would the offense not exactly move better when they're both on the floor? And I don't know if Steve Nash has an answer for that yet. Maybe that's why he's still tinkering with things and figuring out which lineups work and how to stagger those two guys, or not to stagger them, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to kind of figure out. But I do think that this was a learning experience for where the Hawks are at. Like, the Hawks are just not quite there. There's kind of this debate about who's going to step up in the Eastern Conference. And like, look, there's a lot of time, right? We're in the first month. There's a lot of things that can happen. I will just say, like, the Heat look like an absolute juggernaut, and the Hawks just look like a pretty good team. So that they're going to be chasing, I think, Miami, at least for the foreseeable future in the season. They're going to be chasing because the Hawks have not started out like locked in 100%. There's a lot of room for improvement, I think, for Atlanta. For Brooklyn, I wrote this today. I just think they're going to be fine. I don't think they're going to be great. I don't think they're going to be impressive. I don't think they're going to be dominant. I just think they're going to be fine. They got enough to get through the regular season. We'll find out if they got enough in the playoffs.
It's all really dependent on how James Harden progresses, I think, because if he gets back to MVP caliber play,
you know what, Jackson, I'll be honest. Here's a take. I don't care. They can have all the offense in the world, but they have been muscled by the Bucks and Heat with physicality because they don't have enough size and muscle in the front court. They do not. Like, attempting to outscore these teams in a playoff setting when things grind down, I do not think is doable. You have to be good enough defensively. I don't think the Nets are. Like, they're getting away with stuff because they switch a lot, and that just makes things hard on teams. Over the course of a series, I think versus the top teams, it's going to be a challenge. And I'm not sure that having Harden, even if Kyrie comes back, because they're going to revisit the mandate on January 1st, and KD, like, that's the idea everyone's holding on to. It's just like, well, it won't matter because they'll just score like 120. You're not doing that in the playoffs consistently versus the top teams. They have ways of figuring you out and slowing you down to a point where at least it causes a threat. The Nets can win the title, absolutely, but I'm not convinced that all they need is more offense in order to get there.
All right. Well, coming up, we've got the rest of the games around the league, and we'll get there after a quick message from our friends over at McDonald's, because this episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect. Look, I don't know about you, Matt, but when I think of McDonald's, I actually like immediately think back to like middle school basketball days, like after my dad would pick me up from game nights and we'd swing by the McDonald's right down the street from my house. And back then, all I would eat is chicken nuggets. I was such a picky eater growing up. And now, like if I go to a McDonald's, like I'll, you know, spicy chicken sandwich is where it's at, especially when I'm trying to save a little bit of money. But if I'm going to have like an actual meal, like I'm going to sit down with the Texas Homestyle burger, get a large fry, get a Dr. Pepper to wash it all down with. What's your go-to McDonald's meal?
My go-to is the double quarter pounder. It's just, it harkens back to my high school days. I will say that one of my favorite memories with McDonald's, I went to see Avengers Endgame with my son, who was like a massive Avengers fan at the time. I picked him up early from school to go catch a showing and I brought him McDonald's. And like, he still talks about it as like one of the best days of his life.
I love that. That's amazing. So head over to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it.
Welcome back to Locked On NBA. Matt Moore and Jackson Gatlin on this Thursday episode. Glad to have you with us. We're going through our lightning rounds before we get to the last of our marquee games for the night. A lot of action to get through. So let's start with what was an absolutely just a fantastic game in Memphis. Nuggets, Grizzlies, part deux. One of those duplex sets where Denver played a two-game set in Memphis. Memphis gets the second win out of both of them. It was close. It was a nail biter. It took Nikola Jokic missing a game winner at the very end after John Morant missed a free throw. But the Grizzlies hang on for the 108-106 victory. John Morant, only 18-6. It felt like he had more. Like, it felt like he was absolutely fantastic. The difference maker in this game, honestly, was Jaren Jackson Jr. 7-14 from the field, 5-9 from three. If Jackson's going to shoot like that from the perimeter, that fundamentally changes what the Grizzlies are capable of. The Nuggets absolutely were prepared to let him shoot those. He got those shots. He knocked them down. Desmond Bain, 16 points on 14 shots, but I felt like his ability to once again hit shots off of the dribble is crucial for what they do. Big game from Zaire Williams. The rookie comes through with 3 three-pointers, 4 of 8 from the field for 11 points. He had a terrific game. This was a game that wound up being very, very narrow, but I will say that like it didn't feel that way. They jumped out way big in front, way in front of the Nuggets, and the Nuggets basically tried playing catch up the entire game. They got a lead. They came all the way back, got tied. Grizzlies going with like a 1-point lead. Nuggets go up briefly in the third quarter. But once again, with the Nuggets, the story is the bench. Facu Campazzo, -8. Jeff Green, -13. PJ Dozier, 0-4 from the field and a -11. Jamichael Green was actually not bad tonight. He plays the minutes with Jokic, so he wound up with an 11. But look, Nikola Jokic winds up with a -3. You lose the Jokic minutes and you lose the game. Literally, if they win the Jokic minutes by 1 point, they win this ball game. But they didn't. Michael Porter Jr. with an efficient 12 points on 12 shots, but once again, okay, but 0-3 from three. Will Barton had a terrible first half and then bounced back in the second half to try and get them back into it. The Grizzlies continue to just kind of pace things very, very well. This is also like, for it being a 106-108 game, this was a super high efficiency ball game. 113 offensive efficiency for the Grizzlies in the win, 111.6 for the Nuggets. Like, this was a really high efficiency game that just happened to be played at a super slow pace. But this is a big set of wins for Memphis, who continues to kind of prove that they're on the level of seriously challenging for a top four seed in the Western Conference early.
You didn't even mention the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr., it looked like he fouled Nikola Jokic there at the end of regulation. Do you not think that was a foul? Do you not look at the replay?
I don't like those to be decided. I don't like the last plays of the game to be decided by fouls, Jackson. I prefer to
even if
my,
it is a foul.
I prefer my games to be decided by players, by hoopers making hoops. That's me. I'm a real hooper, Jackson.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, on that note, Clippers Timberwolves. Clippers secured their first road win of the season, 126-115 over the T-Wolves. They had 32 points from Paul George and a season high 29 from Reggie Jackson. It was pretty much a back and forth game for a lot of the night until the third quarter, where the Clippers went on a 12-2 run to take a comfortable lead that they did not relinquish the rest of the way. The Timberwolves were able to kind of like cut it down a little bit midway through the fourth quarter, about, you know, 4-ish minutes left to go. And then Patrick Beverley decides to do Patrick Beverley things, took extreme exception to Luke Kennard hand checking him on like an inbounds play, smacked his hand away once, then smacked his hand away a second time, then gets teed up for it. So gives the Clippers a free point there. Goes to do the actual inbound. So when he was like receiving the inbound first, Kennard was checking him. Then he goes to actually do the inbounds and he becomes the inbound passer and then coughs it up immediately on the inbounds pass, and the Clippers get a free 2 points on the other end. So Patrick Beverley giving up 3 points late in this game, when you're trying to claw your way back into it, not exactly a great way for the Timberwolves to try and win games. No D'Angelo Russell in this game, still sitting out with an ankle injury. Anthony Edwards did leave this game very briefly, but came back in. I believe he bumped knees, I think it was, at one point in this game. Had 28 points on 11 of 21 shooting. Karl-Anthony Towns struggling in this one. 18 points, just 6 of 16 from the floor. Solid win for the Clippers, who are off to a bit of, I mean, it feels like everybody's off to a rocky start this season. Matt, is it just me, or is this just like a really weird start to the NBA season?
Except for Miami. That's it. Miami's good. Everybody else is kind of like, well, I don't know about this. Paul George was sensational in this game. Some of the shots he was hitting were like super well contested. There was nothing you could do about it. 11 of 18 for 32 points for PG-13. Just absolutely terrific. Here's the big difference in this one, honestly. So the Wolves outscored them in the paint 56 to 42, and the Wolves had 43 bench points to 29 for the Clippers. 21 made three-pointers for the Clippers, 14 for the Wolves. Like, the math game. They lost the math game. And I will say, like, this was a I think this is a concerning game for the Wolves, who have gotten off to a pretty good start. Like, they've gotten some wins and felt good. This one was concerning because their offense still isn't improving and their defense is starting to crack. They're playing a defensive scheme that takes a lot of effort, and the Clippers basically exploited them and got them to overcommit, which spread things out and then generated all those open threes. If teams pick up on that as like a model to use, and a lot of teams don't do a lot of game planning in the regular season, but any team that actually goes in with that direct approach and can execute that game plan, I think you're going to tear the Wolves up. They need to get the offense going if they're going to have a chance this season.
I will say, I just want to throw it in. I will say it did take the Clippers shooting 58% from behind the arc, right? And they still only, they pulled away at the end, sure. So the final score, it's an 11-point difference. But the T-Wolves were very much in this game, and I think D'Lo gives them like a steadying force offensively. Like, I feel like at times D'Angelo Russell knows exactly when to slow things down, speed things up in transition, and he's been really good for them early. So to not have him here in this game, especially some of the possessions where they really need a bucket or they really need to, you know, get a quality possession, I feel like he's the guy that does that for them. Patrick Beverley is not D'Angelo Russell for this Timberwolves team. So I'm not nearly as worried about this loss, I think, as you are, just on the surface.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's go to the great state of Texas and the Dallas Mavericks versus the San Antonio Spurs. Jackson, you had given me this game as we divvied up the games. I'm going to be honest with you. I could not watch this game because I cannot stand watching the Mavericks anymore. I cannot stand watching this beautiful offense that used to be so great to watch and Luka was so fun and has now been dragged into a lagoon of sewage by various forces, and now they escape with a 1-point win, where, by the way, Jason Kidd told Jalen Brunson at the line with a chance to put him up 2 to miss the second free throw. The Spurs got the rebound and had a chance to win. Like,
this game was such a mess. And the fact that
look, I mean, on the Spurs side, you got to look at this and be like, so look at this straight. You scored Luka Doncic in 36 minutes. You outscored him by 17 points and you lost. Like, what were you doing in the remaining 12 minutes? And the answer is losing your ass off. Look, I think on the surface,
they were busy losing to Jalen Brunson is what was happening.
Jalen Brunson, who was absolutely, by the way, Brunson, the numbers of Brunson were good last year. he's been phenomenal this season. He's been empowered by Kidd. He's very confident. 9-17 from the field, 31 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, plus 13 for Jalen Brunson. He was the difference maker. Hit the big shots down the stretch. Why does Luka Doncic look horrible? He had 23 points on 25 shots, Jackson. Like, I get they won. And that's going to be like the Mavericks fan like resort. It's like, well, but we got the win. Like, whatever. And I'm just like, look, I'm telling you, every single game, the Mavericks look bad. Every game, the Mavericks look bad. At some point, this eye test is going to catch up in the standings. And that's going to be awkward. It is a rough time. I was more mad at them in this game winning than I would have been if they just like had a bad night and lost. But it's just like, why is everything so difficult for you? Like, San Antonio's young and they don't really know what they're doing. And Jakob Poeltl is out with COVID. Like, I'm just going to tell you right now, Jakob Poeltl plays, they probably win this ball game. That's the difference of this game, Jackson. Jakob Poeltl, who I like a lot. It's Jakob Poeltl. What are the Mavs doing?
They're currently kidding themselves. There we go.
There we go.
Right. Had to drop in a sweet, amazing pun to wrap up the just the frustrations of what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks. We got another Western Conference game over here. The Kings got their first home win of the season against the Pelicans. Final score 112-99. Well-balanced team effort. Had 7 different guys score in double figures, led by Harrison Barnes, who continues a pretty strong start to the season for Harrison Barnes. Had 23 points on just 8 shots. Went to the free throw line a ton in this game. 9 of 10 at the charity stripe, I believe. Just a solid win for the Kings. Sacramento closed things out with a 14-4 start at the top of the fourth quarter, and then kind of didn't look back from there. Kind of a quiet fourth quarter between both teams to wrap that thing up. And then we've got one more game. We're missing a game on the slate, aren't we?
We are. We have one more game to go through.
Where's our last game at? This is what I have. This is what I get for having so many tabs open.
I mean, there are a million games. So it's not all that crazy. You're missing the big game of the night.
The big game. There we go. What was supposed to be LaMelo versus Steph and then turned into Miles Bridges versus Jordan Poole. Oh, man. This was a fun game.
Nope.
Hornets, Warriors. I've got Miles Bridges now pegged for he's going to be in contention for most improved player of the year. Like, he started off the season so ridiculously strong. His numbers are like double what they were last season.
I get it. The problem is I didn't think he was going to get it because
the Hornets are good. Here's the problem. That's the other thing, right? So if the Hornets stay good, he's going to stay in that discussion.
We'll circle back on that. Go ahead and give me the wrap on what you think, what you thought about this game, and we'll talk about it a little bit.
How difficult is it to guard the Golden State Warriors with all the back screens, all the cutting action, all the passing, the ridiculous number of assists that they had in this game? What was it? It was 33 assists on 42 made shots. Mm-hmm. Just everywhere you're turning, and you've got Draymond Green with 8 assists, Steph Curry with 9 assists, even though Steph didn't have like his, usual transcendent scoring, performance night at the office, just 15 points on 6 of 15 shooting. He was dishing out assists left and right. Jordan Poole was electric in this game, 31 points, 11 of 21 shooting, 7 of 16 from behind the 3-point line. One of my biggest questions for this Warriors team is, right, the big question for them is what are they going to look like when Klay comes back? But I know we've discussed this before, thinking, okay, well, when we were doing our ballots for who's going to win, be in contention for sixth man of the year. And you were like, oh, Jordan Poole. Is it crazy to think that they should be moving Wiggins to the bench in place of Klay Thompson and not Jordan Poole?
It's not. I mean, that's the thing is I think my bet's dead in the water, which is why I also have him for most improved player, but I actually think that both he and Miles Bridges are both going to lose to Ja. But I think it's actually makes a lot of sense. Like, Poole's scoring has been absolutely just sensational. Like, if you had Klay Thompson as a floor spacer, it's going to make it easier, because if Poole's on the court, you have another guy that can create off the dribble, right? You can play Klay at 3. He can play slower players. He doesn't have to take the primary assignments as much. It makes you a little undersized. I think that's a problem, because the Warriors are winning with defense as well as offense right now. Like, the Warriors aren't winning with either one. They're winning with both. This is why their margins for victory have been pretty comfortable, is when they're winning, they're shutting you down and they're getting production. Like, think about this. Steph Curry had 15 points on 15 shots and was a minus one. They outscored the Warriors when Steph was on the floor. And not only did they lose, they lost by double digits. They lost by 22. Like, it got away at the end in garbage time? That's frightening. Like, you should be frightened of the Warriors. They don't need Curry to be supernova. They don't need Steph to be hitting 35-foot pull-ups all the time. He's still going to hit them a lot of the nights. Like, they have enough weapons. They have enough defense.
They have so much production. Like, this, it just and Gary Payton II off the bench was amazing in this game.
Yeah,
both sides of the court, defense, offense. I mean, doing all the little things. Really, got to shout it out here. Was 6 of 9 shooting from the floor on the way to 14 points. I was blown away by him. Bielitsa is another guy who he's going to hit some shots for you throughout the course of a game, right? I don't know how, like, they picked up all these different guys and they really reloaded their roster this season. It felt like last year for this Warriors team, it was such like an uphill battle all season for Steph, like on a nightly basis. Like, he was kind of doing the James Harden thing, right? Like, he was putting the team on his back and like carrying the Warriors last season. And they came up just a little bit short. This year, it doesn't feel like he has to do that. They retooled and reloaded, and now they have a ton of weapons. And like you said, they're winning on both sides of the court. They're a scary team.
This team was talked about as like, you know, they might be a playoff team this year. And I was like, what are you talking? Like, this is a title contending team. Like, this is a title contend. If this team goes into the playoffs without losing one of their starters and to a season-ending injury, and like, basically what I'm talking about is just Steph, Dre, Jordan Poole, Clay. If they have those four guys.
One of these things is not like the other. I'm just going to.
Right. If they have those four guys, then they are a title contender. Like, they could beat anybody. Like, if you know, look at the Lakers, right? Like, they have trouble. They are inconsistent on defense. Obviously, they have spacing issues on certain nights. They've looked good offensively lately. Like, the Nuggets are still waiting to get Jamal back.
The Lakers look good offensively lately because they just played the Rockets 2 games in a row. Okay, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, funny how that works. I seriously don't know who you're scared of in the West if you're not scared of the Warriors. Like, right now, I get it. I do want to note this, by the way, just as, like, you're listening to this podcast. It's easy to be like, it's early, and you're going to hear that a ton, right? It's early, and it is. I'm not saying it's not. I am saying, however, that as of tonight, most teams are through 10% of their season. We're already 10% of the way through. Like, you have just, like, you were down to 90% of your season left. And you're like, oh, we have 90%. We're going to play another 2 weeks. And guess what? We're going to be down another, like, you're going to be down another 10%. This stuff catches up very, very quickly. I don't think that anything is really, like, your situation is not set or in terms of expectations. I don't think until December 15th. But at that point, you'll know a lot. Like, if these teams that are struggling don't dig out, and if the teams that are at the top don't fall off by December 15th, that gives you a pretty good idea of, barring significant drama, upheaval, injury, etc., what the forecast is going to be for the season. And the Warriors, if they keep doing this, they look terrifying.
No arguments there. As somebody who's been terrified of the Warriors for the better part of the last decade, I hate that they're back on top. So, or look like they're back on top. I will put that disclaimer out there because there's still plenty of season left to be had. But with that, that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On NBA Thursday. As always, we appreciate you checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts at, free and available on every single platform: Apple, Spotify, Google, the brand new Odyssey app. Also, check out the new Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Subscribe there. Like, comment, do all that good stuff. You can follow Matt on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. But for today's show, that is going to do it. As always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA Thursday.